All right, let's go. You're rolling with Jason and Jeff. 92.9 FM. ESPN. My partner John is feeling good because he's dancing around here. Y'all can't see him, but it's happening. I'm feeling good. Hopefully, producer Pam and our boss, Brad Carson, are feeling good. Hopefully, you're feeling good, Memphis, on this beautiful Thursday. We got plenty to talk about. Have the NBA Finals started yet? It doesn't feel like it. Boston's domination of this thing, including of Game 3 last night, is looking more like a 1 versus an 8 seed, if you know what I mean. I got a real hot take.
Hot take coming.
On Boston. That's going to blow your mind.
Hot take presented by Sonic.
Because what I hear, you're presented by Sonic. Live free. Eat Sonic.
Somebody had the groovy fries.
Bro, I took my wife last night.
Man, took his wife last night. Let's
to
go.
Sonic.
Just to get the groovy fries.
I sure did.
And are you going to have a review for us?
Of course.
Man,
already know.
You bringing it today.
You already know. But hot take on Celtics. What I hear a lot of today, John, what I've heard a lot of so far, is what Luka ain't doing. Haven't heard enough of what the Boston Celtics are. Here's the thing. It's not my hot take. But the more I see of these Celtics, the more I'm starting to agree with you. This is one of the best teams ever.
Wow. Now, that's big. When you come my
I'm
way.
Coming your way.
That's a especially.
Doesn't happen as often as you come my
it
way.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So.
Right. J.J. Redick. Back in contention.
My God.
Maybe he always was.
My God.
And this was just meant to really to try to ruin the credibility.
Shams really going to come out
Shams
of this looking Shariah, good.
Phoenix rising from the ashes, perhaps. John Martin's got some recruiting news. It's always a good day when he's leading Memphis Tigers basketball. Also some staff news. Big staff news, really.
Yes.
I would say so. And I hand it off to you, my brother.
Well, it's good to be here. It was a fun night last night. As you said, the Celtics are proving, their greatness.
You were on the right side of that.
I've been on the right side of every game of the finals because I bet the Celtics every game of the finals.
So it's gotten easier for you because of these Celtics.
I'm just betting the Celtics.
You had a rough playoffs. You told us that.
Yes.
The Celtics have made it easy for you.
They have definitely. I'm closing strong.
That's how good they are.
I'm closing strong. Absolutely. Had money line last night. I told you that on the show yesterday. So we would not need the points. We did not need the points. Yeah, plus 130, 500, paid 650, I think, was the
congrats
was
to
the
you.
Bet there. That was a nice little night.
Wow.
Nice little night, no doubt about it.
Congrats.
Brad continuing to catch fire.
I don't like it the way he's finishing, I'll be honest with you.
He'll have one more fade Brad pick for you this tomorrow.
Yeah.
That'll be the last one of the year. There's no doubt about it.
I'm kind of sad for our listeners because I got hot at the end.
But you did.
And I had somebody that when you made the pick yesterday said, see, I told you this is fake. He's doing it, so it goes the other way. I said, no, it's integrity picks. What does it turn out to be? Integrity picks.
They're integrity picks. I'm not here doing a bit. This is
not a bit,
Brad,
guys.
Nor anybody knows. We don't know the future, right?
No.
So it's impossible for us to know what the right or wrong side is and intentionally deceive.
He's not trying to lose.
And by the way,
listeners,
if we're not picking the Celtics at this point, what the hell's wrong with you?
Exactly. I mean, these are integrity picks.
We said this yesterday.
Fortunately, he's finished hot.
He's sunk his teeth into the the Celtics.
The Celtics monster.
And it's exactly. I mean, this is not like some, great conspiracy.
Even the squares are on to it.
100%, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, is it square? Is it sharp? I mean,
I don't know.
The Mavs did close -3.5. -3, -3.5. So, again, if you had bet the Mavs at open, which was -1,
mm-hmm.
you got incredible value on the game. Right?
Yeah.
So the sharp money, I don't know if it was square, if it was sharp, whatever. But it doesn't matter because the Celtics are one game away from an NBA Finals. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown getting their first NBA championships.
You need to switch that around.
Well, Jason Tatum did outscore Jaylen Brown.
By 1 point?
Yeah, I mean, Tatum was great last night.
Not better than Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown's going to win the
Chocolate
MVP.
Chocolate Shaft MVP.
I mean, I think that's not a nickname that's going to stick. Chocolate Shaft.
It's not going to stick.
No, I don't think it's going to stick. I think redundant. shaft is black.
Bro is your MVP.
He is your MVP at this point.
Okay.
He is your MVP at this point. And, you know, again, I don't want to.
So please put his name before Tatum, at least for this year.
That's fine.
At least for these playoffs.
I mean, I think
Tatum had a better year.
They're both equally great players.
I will grant you that.
You know, I mean.
One has stepped up in a way that we've been asking.
Yes.
When are these guys going to do this?
Yes.
I think one, certainly. I'm not saying Tatum is playing. And I hate to pit him.
Yes.
Don't want to be part of that.
Right. Remember when we were trying to get Scalabrine to trade Jaylen Brown to us? Remember that? It was 2 years ago.
Was he not thinking about it?
No,
he said no from the get-go.
No, okay.
All right, I forgot.
We need to reach out to Scalabrine, by the way, Brad. We need to get him back on.
Did we have a good offer?
No.
A real one?
I don't think so. He never considered it.
Well, then we were just practically beggars.
He honestly stopped. He told us to stop asking.
I'm done with this segment.
He was like, save it. He's like, so quit asking. I ain't trading him. So quit asking.
Yeah, he was smart.
And look, this is the testament, to keeping a core together, and the pieces around it may change.
Yeah, testament to Brad Stevens as well.
You know, yeah, Drew Holiday got brought in.
Those moves.
Drew Holiday got brought into two different situations and delivered championships. That's pretty amazing. He was brought in to help Giannis. He did that, and then he was brought in here with the Boston Celtics, and he did that as well. And he wasn't great. That is the pick that Brad lost last night. He lost over.
Nah, he's going to lose those bonuses. That's been pretty consistent.
No doubt. And I said at the time, that's the square.
It's helping us.
He's so square to go over Drew 13.5, right? Like, his usage is really low. He was coming off that 26-point performance, but it's not like that's going to happen regularly. But what is undeniable is just this Celtics team. And I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. We went through – historically, you mentioned it. You're coming my way. The SRS, which I don't know exactly what that stands for. It's like just some way to.
They need to find out.
Rank.
This becomes more and more obvious that they are one of the best we've seen.
They're the third best in the modern era. And then they're fifth all time, but they're the third best in the modern era behind 95-96 Bulls, 2016-17 Warriors with Kevin Durant that went 67-15. And obviously that they're number three. So they're ahead of teams like the 96-97 Bulls, like the 15-16 Warriors, like the 15-16 Spurs, like the 91-92 Bulls, like the 14-15, every other team that's ever played. You know, and I think it's because, you have two guys in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum who can give you 30 on the same night. That is a rarity.
Kyrie and Luka can do that.
That's true.
And they're not even close.
That is you're
right. It's that
they were the greatest backcourt ever assembled, though, according to Stan Van Gundy, and I think you said that yesterday. So I mean,
again, greatest offensive backcourt.
Oh, now we're adding syllables.
No, it's what he said from the get-go. Offensive backcourt ever assembled can't be one of the greatest teams ever assembled.
They are. I mean, they're an amazing team. They're an amazing team.
I'm having to come around on that.
It's not
the
sexy.
Idea that this is a historic team that we're watching.
Exactly.
That's 15-2 now in the playoffs.
Damn.
They hadn't lost since game two of Cavs.
That's crazy. That is crazy. I mean,
if they win tomorrow, they finish it on an 11-game winning streak, and they will be 80-20 this season. Got that from Greeny this morning.
80-20.
Credit Greeny and ESPN.
And
how impressive is that? 11 to finish.
Where would 80-20 rank?
Among the best. I'm sure you got to add the playoff records. But in terms of records, they're 16-1, the 2016-17 Golden State Warriors. You got a 15-1 Lakers team, 0-0-1. 76ers 12-1. I don't even count those because you weren't playing as many games. And then Celtics are there at 15-2, right there in fifth. So in terms of best records in the playoffs, if they finish this off, I mean, they're going to be among the elite.
The record is the Warriors in 15-16. They won 88 games.
There you go.
But I don't think they won the championship that year.
And again, how many? They played more playoff games, but I'm assuming because there's more losses in there.
Yeah, they were 73-9, right? I don't know how many losses they finished with, but.
What's that record again? Total record?
I don't know the total record. I only have the wins, but it's 88 wins. And again,
Boston
didn't win the title.
80-20.
They didn't win the title.
Yeah.
So, I think the record for winning the championship would be your Bulls, 95-96. They had 87 wins. So that would be the record for that year.
That 16-17 Warriors team, what they do in the regular season, because they had 16 They went 16-1. Just want to add to put us where we would be total.
Damn.
That's what I'm saying.
That is nuts.
16-1 is the best.
Let's see. That's the
16-17 Warriors.
That would be...
How many wins does that put us at?
They were 67-15 in the regular season. So...
83. Right?
Yeah.
16-1.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's amazing. But again, that's the category.
You understand? You play fewer playoff games when you're...
sweeping everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But your wins will be
total,
the same, though.
So total wins, you probably want to throw out, right? I mean, because you're going to play more games if you've lost more of them.
Yeah, it's really more... In terms
of playoffs.
It's more so, I guess, about how many losses you have.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're going to end this on an 11-game winning streak if they win tomorrow.
Right.
And be 16-2 in these playoffs. Only lost two game twos.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's a dominant run that I don't know will translate in terms of television ratings because it's not sexy.
I don't think that's going to be good.
Well, you think it's sexy because you think Jaylen Brown is sexy.
Well, just be careful. Yeah, I see y'all going to take that and just run with it.
But you do. I mean,
he's a handsome brother. When you start saying sexy and stuff, it gets a little crazy.
Okay. Handsome.
Mm-hmm. Handsome brother.
My bad. And
vegan. Did you know that about him?
I did not know that. Maybe that's why he's so aggressive, right? Like, he's just mad.
I didn't think vegans could be that aggressive.
Yeah.
When it's takeover time.
I think it's because he doesn't get that Applebee's steak.
When I saw the vegan.
Right.
I just said, wow. Again, to know that about him now.
Yeah. So
just adds to how an impressive a performance this is, I think. No meat.
Yeah. I don't know.
Through these playoffs.
I don't know if, the Mavs can take one if they want to take one. My guess is they probably will.
I don't know. Saw a lot of quitting Luka last night.
Well, he was disqualified.
If the argument would be, I have to be better than I was, right? Let me give this my all in game four, because if I quit, I'm gonna catch a little bit of a label here in terms of the end. Despite how great I've been in the playoffs, right? If he does so the argument would be, you're gonna get his best shot, obviously.
Yep.
And he's gonna play like a madman next game. There's no promise those shots going to go in, though. This Boston defense is real.
Yes.
Even without Porzingis.
No, that's the thing. Like, we haven't even, mentioned that. It didn't matter because Xavier Tillman, X-Man, came in.
How about that?
And was absolutely sensational defensively.
And what was crazy is I was texting you how this dude's going to get a free ring. He's not doing anything. And then he comes in yesterday. They put him in the rotation and is contributing.
He earned the ring yesterday.
He earned it.
He earned the ring.
Just with that one-game performance.
Yep. I mean, he was getting switched off on Kyrie and Luka quite a bit.
Yes, yes, and bodied Luka.
Yep.
Inside, forced a miss. Was really added something there.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like when we were talking about that game.
Always ready when called. Big three, he hit. First attempted three of the playoffs.
That's right.
Remember when he was doing that against Golden State in the play-in?
Yep.
Like the guy always has been when you call on him, like he's ready at least.
Yep.
You know. See, it has the ceiling, but man, so happy to see him contributing last night because he's going to get a ring out of this.
Yep, he is. And that's, again, when you start talking about the handicap here, you know, it's like, okay, you're telling me that Boston was a 7-point favorite at home, and they're going to go from a 7-point favorite to a 3-point underdog just because of a home road split and no Porzingis. Like, that's probably too far.
Too much.
That's too far. You know, I mean, I think Dallas pick 'em minus one was probably more accurate because it did. I mean, there was a moment there where you had to think Dallas was going to win it. They cut the 20, whatever it was, point lead down all the way to two, wasn't it? Or three?
Three.
Yeah. So you kind of got that sinking feeling like, oh, this is flipped. Then, of course, Luka, he fouls out. That's a call you almost feel like you never see for that to be the sixth.
Luka was basically daring the refs to call the last one.
Yeah.
You know, he was already upset with them, clearly. And again, you know, and I'll give Doris Burke credit. She's criticizing him in the moment for not getting back up in some of those instances where he's trying to draw the foul on those shots, not getting back up. He's given up free baskets on the other end, and all of that seemed to sort of add up. You know, that frustration seemed to add up even and was still built up, clearly, even in them making the run back. And so it showed that there's levels to this. And while we, you know, and this is, you know, it's part the, you know, recency bias and all that, and the Van Gundy talk about best offensive backcourt we've ever seen, and we're trying to, I mean, there's a point in these playoffs, John, where we're saying Luka Doncic is the best player in the world, trying to elevate him above Jokic. For all of that, what you find out is once you get to this level, and especially against guys who have been here, there's a lot more to learn. And so you saw this pouty side of Luka totally exposed last night. And again, it's costing them back buckets on the other end. And it's back to, we were just crediting him for his defensive performance. How bought in, at least, how committed he seemed to be. He's not a great defender, but how much more committed he was last series. This series, he's been awful. And frankly, the Celtics have exposed him in terms of, no, we're going to keep going at him. Like, we're not going to let up. And what you've got is a frustrated Luka. And listen, you know, being better in game four ain't going to teach you the lesson. Like, you're going to have to come back in seasons to come and be better. But it's what you're going against, man. You're learning a ton against a team that's seasoned, but also, you know, with this front office of what Brad Stevens has done, they're so deep now. They've just got too many answers for you.
Yeah, it's been impressive. You know, again, I think the interesting question, Celtics will put the finishing touches on this, whether it's tomorrow or we're back home in Boston, whatever. You know, is this going to be it for Luka, though? Like, do you think he gets back? It was interesting sort of to hear it put in perspective. KD's only been to the finals once, not with the Warriors, right? So if you remove the Warriors from that situation, he's only been one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go down the list of one time appearing.
Sure.
You know, so it's like, it's a reminder that it's very hard to get to the finals. And even when you do get there, it can be ugly.
Well, I think what's happened, I thought about this last night, is the, you know, Boston, and you can't take any credit from them, and I've probably spent too much time doing that. Just as dominant as we've seen, we've established that. But with the Mavericks, it does feel like the West, the competitive West, ate itself, right? And in terms of for this moment against this Boston team, this was not the best matchup. Cut, right? I mean, you would have said Denver,
yeah,
right, or someone else. But my point is,
yep,
like the West sort of ate itself, and it spit out what the 5 seed, and so Boston is benefiting from that too. A team like you said, Luka's never been here. Sure, Kyrie has, but were they ready for this against this team?
Exactly.
Could another team, maybe Minnesota even? But you put Denver there too. You know, Dallas was fortunate in the way the West sort of ate itself.
Absolutely.
And you can't take any credit from them. They knocked off the one seed OKC.
Beat those teams.
They beat those teams.
OKC was super young.
But that competitive West sort of ate itself. Look at the way Luka came out of it all banged up and everything else. He's taking pain. And it did. It really hurt Dallas in terms of they limped into this.
Yep.
Where Boston, a team that was already ready,
cruised in 5 games,
cruised,
sweeps.
Then got Porzingis back.
Yes.
Right, for at least the first couple of games, establishes itself winning both of those. And again, you ask yourself, was this the best team out of the West for this moment against this team? Probably not. Boston, again, not to take anything away from Boston, but they're benefiting from that. And so you're right.
No
to go back to what you initially said, who knows if Luka gets back?
Because is it going to break that way ever
again? As everybody's is talking about, dude, people are going to get better. Grizzlies are going to be better.
OKC will not be that bad next year.
They're not taking a step back.
They got the scars.
100%. They learned something.
They're older.
And losing to that. Minnesota's not going anywhere, even though they've got decisions to make in terms of that personnel.
And Kyrie's, aging.
Because Anthony Edwards has tasted blood. Like, he's, you know, he's been in that water, and he's learned some lessons. And so, to your point, to go back to circle this back, ain't no promise Luka's going to be back here.
I would bet against it, honestly. I would bet against it. Now, he's young enough, but again, it's like, you have to have everything go right. And let's not act like that Mavs team is just, like, overwhelmingly talented.
Dude, they were 18th in defense for the regular season.
Yeah.
Now, again, after the trade, they're one of the best defensive teams. We're talking about that's a big part of the season that you didn't have, you know, Gafford and these guys, P.J. Washington. You became one of the better teams in the NBA. All that said, like, we weren't looking at this team saying it was a team that was ready to win a championship, and it's not. And what you've done, I mean, it couldn't be more clear. You're going up against a team that, you know, not just built to win one, but obviously poised and ready. And it knows that it's got this team that's, you know, set aside Kyrie, that's never been here.
Yep.
You know, a leading guy that still shows weakness in terms of the way he responds to Boston feels like it's feeding off of that. Like, that's the game plan to frustrate Luka, and man, they are executing. So, you know, it's a bad matchup for Dallas. Certainly, it's the wrong team, you know, at the wrong time right now. But
no doubt.
Again, that's not taking anything away from Dallas, because like you said, they came out of a West that was stacked. So you got to give them credit.
Yeah.
They're not ready for this.
Yeah, he fouled out as the Mavs were on a 20-2 run.
Killed them, though.
Yep.
Putting your team in that position,
no doubt,
where you can't be a part of trying to finish off that comeback.
You knew again, it was over once he left, obviously.
Shows the immaturity in this moment,
yeah.
Right? And for this moment, you got to recognize, bro, they need you down the stretch.
Yep.
You can't challenge the refs like that. But again, that's the next level for him in terms of understanding this moment and how I've got to be out there.
Exactly.
You know, whether I'm struggling, frustrated, or not.
It's just really hard.
Because Kyrie was playing well.
Yeah, he was.
Like,
I mean,
you
can't ask for better.
Dallas wasted a good Kyrie game.
Absolutely. 35.
Told you Drew wasn't going to shut him down all series.
Yeah, he woke up. He was making crazy-ass shots, man.
He was. You got a good one from him.
No doubt about it.
Stephen A. said he was in his bag.
He was. Unfortunately, nobody else really showed up. Luka got disqualified, and that was about it. So it's 3-0. Friday will be game four. I believe it's -1. So, I mean, it's a pick 'em, basically. If the Dallas Mavericks want to fight and take this thing back to Boston and go from there, you know, we'll see.
Can I give you my hot take?
Sure.
Marcus Smart had to die as a Celtic for the on-court leader in Jaylen Brown to truly emerge.
Wow. Yeah, I bet this is actually really painful for Marcus. This has got to be painful for him.
And really it applies to Tatum as well.
Yeah.
But I think in some way, Marcus Smart, who had been the vet, right, the one that had made the playoffs all 9 of his years and been the older guy, they would defer to him, John. Remember watching these Celtics teams in the playoffs and we're saying, why is Marcus Smart taking one of the last shots? Those younger guys that we've always said should be the face, Batman and Robin, they would defer to Marcus.
Absolutely.
And I do. I think you've seen a growth in both of them. Not just Jaylen, but clearly in Jaylen. Because we've seen how vocal he is with the team now. They hear from him in these huddles and at games and everything else. You know, Marcus used to do that stuff. And sometimes when you move that guy away, you have to do that, right, for the growth to happen. You know, or to speed up that process. Maybe it always was. Maybe it's inevitable. But again, those guys would defer to him. He's the older teammate. He's the guy that's been there in a way where at the end of games, again, they're not the ones. It's, you know, it's Marcus Smart they're throwing it to at the end rather than Jaylen Brown going at Luka Doncic with 5 fouls and getting him out of the game. That's what I'm talking about. Like the growth in those two,
mm-hmm.
Jaylen obviously, but I can't not include Jason Tatum. It's forced those two to grow up in terms of leadership on the court. And I think you're seeing the benefits. That's not to take clearly. Brad Stevens, Drew Holiday, those moves, Derek White's emergence is all part of this. But I'm telling you, like there's something to you take out that leader, you know, that's just naturally that, and it helps the growth of the next guy. Those guys had to step up as leaders.
Yep.
I think that's part of why we're seeing this Boston team cash in the way that it is. You know, you're built for this, but you've been through the moments now, and you're set up in a way where the true leaders that needed to emerge now have the path's been cleared. And Jaylen Brown certainly stepped up to it, my man Shaft.
Absolutely. Finals MVP right there. We'll talk to Drew Hill, get his thoughts on this, get his thoughts on the NBA draft with the Grizzlies. Lots more to come. Drew Hill will join us at 11:25. Then Jeff Calkins at 1:25. Stick around. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Drew Hill covers the Memphis Grizzlies for the Daily Memphian. Big month for the Grizzlies as they are preparing for the NBA draft. Lots of scuttle around that. Drew joins us now. Hello, Drew.
Yo, what's up, guys? How are you?
All good, man.
Pretty
so
good.
Before we get into the draft, let's talk about these Boston Celtics and just the domination that they are putting on, not just the Mavs, but, I mean, 5 games against the Heat, 5 games against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then obviously the sweep against the Indiana Pacers and what looks like will be a sweep against the Mavs. Just when you watch them, it doesn't maybe feel as dominant, but it's happening. Will this team get the respect that it deserves for its domination through the postseason?
Probably not, just because the way that they are structured, they don't have that superstar player that almost every single team has. Now, they have a lot of really good players, and I think Tatum is on the edge there, and honestly, Jaylen Brown is on the edge there. I'm starting to wonder if Jaylen Brown's a better player than Jason Tatum. I know Jason Tatum gets more hype, but what Jaylen Brown has done so far in this series and in the playoffs overall, like, I think he's probably got to be the favorite at this point to win Finals MVP. But that being said, like, none of those guys are Luka. None of those guys are LeBron or Jokic, for that matter. So we may overlook them a little bit just based on how their roster is structured. But I 100% believe that they are the best team in the league, and they've proved it all season long. And, like, it was awesome. I wrote this morning, it was pretty awesome to see Xavier Tillman get in there.
Yes.
I can ask you guys this. Like, I'm trying to avoid talking about Xavier Tillman as if he's, like, gone forever, because obviously he's got a lot longer to play in the league. But, you know, I think he deserves a big tip of the cap from people here. We're not going to celebrate that the way we celebrated Marc Gasol, obviously. Like, I'm not implying that. But I do think it wasn't necessarily what he accomplished in Memphis, but just the way that he did it.
Yes.
I think was really, there's something endearing about that he was willing to go play in the G League and keep himself ready and stepped up in the moments when they need him. And he was also a guy that wasn't too cool to, like, chaperone his kids on field trips to the zoo and, like, gave everybody the time of day. And so I was happy to see him get in the game last night and perform well for the Celtics too. And so I think he deserves our respect for sure here, because he was a true pro and handled himself in the exact manner you would want somebody to handle themselves as a Memphis Grizzly. So that's the side note on the game. But yeah, I think Boston's just the best team, and this series is obviously, at this point, I think it's pretty safe to say it's going to be over, whether it's four games or five games. But Boston just, they've got too much firepower, man. They've got too many solid players that they can put on the floor, and they probably have the best defense in the league.
John brought up something that I think is worth bringing up again about the
that
other side. I
want every day.
It does. Something very notable.
Usually multiple times a day.
But, you know, we have, and I've been part of this. We've sort of crowned Luka up in this run to the finals and what he's done, and probably in the back of our minds thought, okay, well, you know, he'll be back too if they lose to Boston, whatever else. But, you know, coming out of a West that we know, Drew, and you've talked about this, that's going to get better next year, and you can start at the top of the list with teams like the Grizzlies, obviously. You know, it's going to be hard. You know, they were a 5 seed this year, and you got to give them all the credit in the world for getting out of it. But there's no promise that they're going to be back, is there? I mean, that's what, you know, it may be very hard for Luka to get back.
Jokic won finals.
Out of this conference.
Devin Booker won finals.
Yeah.
Has Giannis been to just one? He won it, but I think he only went to one. I mean, this is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You get hurt, Giannis gets hurt, you know, you have other people get hurt, your teammates, like, bad luck.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're having to dodge each and every year, and that's very difficult to do, Drew.
Yeah. I think Boston, we've watched it, but it doesn't happen like it does like it has for Boston, where you keep getting chances all for every team. Dallas may not get another crack, right?
I think that's pretty fair to say. Yeah, I mean, it's the nature of the league, right? When you have those superstar players, you always have a chance, because you could have a scenario in which Luka carries you all the way to the finals, and we've seen that happen multiple times for several teams. But unless that player is LeBron James, right, like, it's going to be an extreme challenge. And it speaks to the urgency in which the Grizzlies need to operate right now,
yes,
right? Because they had bad luck this year, and I think that's fair to say. But nothing is going to be promised for this team moving forward. And right now, they are clearly in a competitive window, and it only gets more challenging as your star players make more money.
Right.
And so I think it's – and look, it's not impossible – think about what Boston did, right? Like, we all kind of laughed at the Jaylen Brown supermax, didn't we? I mean, that's kind of, everybody said he couldn't dribble with his left hand, and he wasn't good enough. He didn't warrant that level of contract. Well, I think Boston has proven that if you put a roster together with good players up and down everywhere, that if you're lacking that superstar, you can still do it. Because I don't think anybody would be surprised if Boston got back to another finals. Now, that speaks partly to the Eastern Conference and just the fact that there's not really a ton of threats out there. But it just speaks of the nature of how hard this is.
Yep.
And how challenging it is to build a championship roster. And that feels to me, because like Chris and I were discussing, who do the Grizzlies feel closer to? The Celtics or the Mavericks? Not in terms of talent, but just in terms of how they could construct a roster. And it feels more like the Celtics, right? Because as amazing as Ja is, and he is amazing, and he could come back with a vengeance, and he could be as good as Luka, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But if he's just the Ja that we've seen, which is a superstar level player, but not a player yet that's carried his team to the finals, the way Memphis gets over the hump there is by getting good Desmond Bain and good Jaren Jackson and putting the right players around them to help them get into the finals. So it almost feels more like Boston. So I think that you can hold out some hope for that. But it's really challenging to do, and it's going to be even harder to do in the West with all of these teams and all this talent. And I'm fascinated. I would be interested to know, and I don't think I have a clear answer to this, just how lopsided this league got. How did we get to this point? Is it just because the East makes terrible draft picks? Is it because players want to play on the West Coast and live in cities on the West Coast? I mean, I don't think it's that simple. But somehow we've ended up with a league that more times than not is really lopsided on the East and the West. And I wish there was a way for them to sort of even that out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it just, I don't want to take any of this for granted. You know what I mean? Like, because it's hard. It's really freaking hard. You know, we 2 years ago, we were like, the Grizzlies' time. And it ain't the Grizzlies' time. You know, it could be again, but like, the window, you know, we always talk about these windows, right? Bro, windows open and shut in one season's time. You know, it's not like this is something that, you know, you get to hold on to for forever because contracts change. Now the second apron is coming into play, you know, like the way you manage a team financially, like all that's going to matter in ways that it didn't used to matter. And so you just can't assume anything. I do believe that the Grizzlies will have a say, you know, next season. Because here's the truth. Clippers coming back. Warriors on the end. Lakers on the end. So there is some room to get back in. And the Pelicans, you never know with Zion's health, right? So there's some room to get back in. But, you know, things still have to go your way, you know? I mean, that it's not enough to just have a good team. You know, that's the...
I think absolutely there's room to get back in. And when the Grizzlies are healthy, we've seen that they're a 50-win team.
Right.
And... you know, as we were just talking about the Mavs, like, would anybody be surprised if the Mavs took a step back next year? I don't think anyone
Fair
would
enough.
Be surprised
yep.
if that happens, right? So there's plenty of room for the Grizzlies to get back in. I think the question more is, are the Grizzlies built to win playoff games? I think if the Grizzlies stay healthy for a full season, they've proven that they have a coach that wins in the regular season. They've got superstars that perform well in the regular season. They've got more talent that they can put on the floor than another team where, I mean, Ja would obviously be a big blow, but like one injury doesn't entirely destroy your team the way it can for other teams. You know, if Dallas were to lose Luka for an extended period of time, they'd be toast. You know, they're done. So they are structured to where they can get back in. I think the question more is, can they win in the playoffs with this team that they've built?
In terms of the Grizzlies, in terms of next year, I was listening to a trade discussed. Harrington had listened to a podcast, and I'm sorry, I don't have the name of it in front of me, but Jeff had asked him to listen to it, break down this trade, but it involved a trade with Toronto Raptors for Jakob Poeltl. He was not a name that we discussed. We've done a lot of Jared Allen and other names. Now, Jakob, his contract situation, what it's like three more years, what is it, $19 million? Just in terms of a guy like that, Drew, we've talked about whether these guys are fits, and we've done a lot of names. Jakob's not one we've done here. What do you think about bringing him in? Obviously, you know, what goes into that, that's another conversation. But in terms of the fit, potentially, he would be.
Yeah. Look, I don't think that the Grizzlies necessarily should not bring in a paint-planted big man like a Klingon or Poeltl or something like that. We have seen the success with our eyes of those types of players in the system that the Grizzlies have used, and the value of having Jaren next to one of those players, both from a rebounding standpoint, but in particular a defensive standpoint, when you allow him to roam and block shots defensively, he's just a much more impactful player. But that being said, I think that there are questions about the direction in which this team wants to go, and I don't know if we know the answer to those questions until we figure out what type of player they add. If they add a player like that, then you can envision them basically trying to win a championship given the system that they've already used and playing less five out, you know, less players on the perimeter, maybe trying to get back to being one of the more dominant paint teams across the league. If they envision their future as a team that's going to be a little bit more versatile and is going to play with more players on the perimeter and shoot a high volume of threes and try to space the floor for Ja drives and try to amplify Ja's self-creation here, that's another direction that they could choose to go. I don't know if we have a clear answer on how they view the future of the league and the future of their team. If that is the case, if they view themselves as the latter, which I think would frustrate some people given the fact that they took a lot of threes last year and weren't very successful at it, if that is the direction, I'm not sure they're going to add a big like Jakob Poeltl. They may add a big that's a little bit more versatile, that moves a little bit better than a player like that. So for me to just speculate on if that would be, I know this isn't the question you asked, but if I were trying to speculate on if that would be a realistic option for the Grizzlies, I think I would have to know the direction in which they view the franchise moving forward. And we don't have clear answers on that just yet. But myself, I think they should play with a traditional big. I think it makes Jaren better. I think you've seen that it can help them win games. Steven Adams was the perfect fit for that role. How someone else would fit, I think, is a different question, but you could try to emulate that as best as possible. So it doesn't hurt to have one of those bigs on your roster moving forward, or just try to have some versatility in general where you could play both ways and both styles. So I think he would fit. I think it would be a good fit, and you would have control over him, as you said, for multiple years. So I'd be interested in what the Grizzlies would have to give up to get a player like that, because you don't want to give up, you know, players that you do have of value on this roster, because you know you've already seen that you're limited if the team has a bunch of injuries over the course of the season, that some of these players haven't exactly proven that they're ready now. Like, so you don't want to give up like a Gigi or anyone of that stature in a deal like that. I'd feel a lot more comfortable if it was a pick and Santi Aldama or salary match elsewhere. I don't know what Poeltl's contract is off the top of my head, so I'd have to look into it. But that would be an interesting move. I think it would be a fit.
Yeah, I think Poeltl's probably a little too much. It's $19.5 million over the next 3 years. That's a lot for what he is. I mean, because we were talking about Jared Allen is 20 over the next two, and that's a borderline all-star guy. And so you wonder if you're being that committed to somebody for that many years, that's certainly, I'm not going to say limited. He does exactly what you need. Drew, I think you laid out, though, in listening to you right there, kind of where I'm at. You want the versatility, because while it's been broken up and we haven't really seen it consistently in the playoffs, which is where you'll make all the, base most of your decisions off of, what we do know is successful is having that guy. Like with Ja Morant leading you, having that Steven Adams screen setter type, you just laid out, a Poeltl type, has been where you've had the most success with this offense. The five out, less success, although obviously in that discussion, you haven't seen all your pieces in that offense. We just know more about success in this offense when you've got that guy. And then back to your point, it's win now time. And so at the very least, you have to have the versatility, right? Sure, you want Jaren to grow at a point, and maybe some matchups are best when he's going to be at the five. But I think with the success that you've seen for the times that we've seen these guys together, you've got to give yourself that versatility by getting that old-fashioned big guy that can, set those screens and be that rebounder. Just you want to give yourself at least those options, right?
Yeah, and you know what else is, interesting about this? It's that we haven't really seen it in a playoff series.
Right, exactly, exactly.
You go back to Minnesota, and if you go back to the Minnesota series, you had that obviously that was before Gobert, right? So
yes.
They had to play that series with Brandon Clark playing a lot of minutes at the 5-1 just because Brandon Clark was playing spectacularly.
Yep.
And two, because that was the right matchup for them.
Exactly.
Then you get to the next series, and so I guess the question after that series is like, all right, well, is Steven Adams going to get played off the floor in the playoffs? Well, you don't necessarily know that that would be true or not.
I'm with
Steven
you.
Adams
yep.
may have been a huge help in the Golden State series,
yep.
but he got COVID, and so you didn't have him, and he wasn't available. So you didn't really see it, and then you come back to the Lakers series, and obviously that's a disaster because you don't have Brandon Clark or Steven Adams.
Right,
so it's not,
right.
There's no real, you can't glean anything from
exactly.
that series either in terms of the front court. So there are definitely options. I think Jared Allen, because you brought him up, he's just a better fit than Poeltl too because he plays above the rim more.
Yes.
And this is a point that Chris Harrington makes often, and is that there's spacing horizontally at the three-point line, and then they're spacing vertically as a lob threat for Ja when Ja drives to the basket. And I just think he would be a really good fit that way.
Agreed.
And so I'm a little bit more comfortable with a player that has a little bit more athleticism or who's a little bit more of a leaper in that way. And, like, I think that's a real question about Klingon, too, is Klingon going to provide that for you? I mean, he does – he moves well enough to where I think he would, but I don't think that that's a certainty. So there's a lot of different directions this team could go. We haven't really seen it in the playoffs, and
right.
this is the biggest question of the offseason for Zach Kleiman is what direction does he want to go? Because, you know, I'm not a Ron Holland guy. I haven't really been a Ron Holland guy, but, like, that would be another option, right? If you're trying to get somebody who moves better, who's going to play defense and who could rebound and use his athleticism next to Jaren potentially as a smaller forward and move Jaren over to the five, like, that might be the type of player you're looking at. So, you know, there's a lot of different options for this team. We're going to learn a lot about how they view themselves and view the future of the franchise and how schematically they're going to play based on who they trade for or who they draft.
Yeah. I'm talking to Drew Hill, covers the Grizzlies for the Daily Memphian. I am a Dalton Connect guy in terms of if they stay at 9 and he's available. I just think, you know, with what he absolutely, like, you know, on paper brings, that you know, injection of scoring, and I think, you know, just his high point of the jumper is going to translate. I'm a big Dalton Connect guy. I'm fine with Edie. Like, I think Edie would be fine. I think he probably is as good as he's ever going to be as a player, but I think he will be serviceable. Do you have a super strong opinion on either one of those guys, or if they should stay at 9, like, what do you think is the best course of action for the Grizzlies here?
I feel pretty good about Dalton Connect as well, but I think it comes with the caveat that you're moving on from Luke Kennard.
Yeah.
Not that they play the same position. I think they can play the same position, but it's not an exact match one for one there. But I do think it's important to have movement shooters in the league, and I think Dalton Connect would certainly get a lot of open shots in a Grizzlies offense that has John Dez on the floor. I think there's questions defensively about how he'll hold up, but there's also questions about Luke Kennard defensively every time he's on the floor as well. So I think if you're going to free up some money there that you could use and to add to your front court, I would be open to drafting a player like Dalton Connect just because I think the shooting is going to translate, and he's definitely one of the best scorers across college basketball. So I'm also a fan of Connect. I would welcome them adding him. They'd obviously have to get a little bit more creative in order to add to the roster in other ways, and I think that would probably mean, I'm not saying it definitely would mean, but it would probably mean Luke Kennard is on the outs, and I wouldn't
right.
even rule out that Luke Kennard renegotiates with Memphis. Like, those discussions are probably happening right now.
There's space for
It'll
both, right? I mean,
it
there
depends.
Is. Look at Oklahoma City, for example, bro. Like, look at how many players they got. You know, they have Aaron Wiggins. They have Isaiah Joe. I mean, they have both, you know, they have a ton of guys that sort of do the same thing, you know. Now,
they didn't use a lottery pick on those guys, though.
Well, fair enough. But, you know, Luke Kennard is not going to be here in 5 years. I mean, he's just not. So, I just, for the next 2 to 3 years, you know, you could figure out a way to, maybe it's not 2 to 3, but you could figure out a way, as you said, you could have both.
Well,
it doesn't have to be one or the other, to me.
Also, as we noted before, if they envision these changes as we're going to space it out offensively and shoot more, like, you need more shooters.
That's the thing. You cannot have too much of that. You know?
Yeah, right.
You cannot have too much shooting, and not in today's NBA. Everybody can shoot.
So, and then Edie, I think, is a little bit I'm with you. I don't know how much room there is to grow there. I think there is a specific skill set that he would bring. I think that the interest from Memphis is legitimate and not just a smokescreen there. But I do think that he would be a little bit tougher to pull. Like, we were asking questions, right? Is Steven Adams going to get played off the floor in the playoffs? I think you would definitely be asking those questions again if you had Zach Edey on the roster. I don't like him as much as Klingon, obviously. There's a reason Klingon's going to go higher, because I just don't think he's as good defensively. I know he tested and moved better than Klingon did, but I don't necessarily see that when I watch Purdue play basketball. He also is going to have a large adjustment in terms of role when he gets to the NBA, because he's not going to get a lot of possessions like the possessions he got at Purdue. So I think there will be an adjustment period for him there. So I don't feel like super strongly about Edie, but if they were to pick him, I could see, just from a rebounding standpoint, the value in having a player like that, just because we saw how important that is. If Memphis isn't going to play offense efficiently, then they need more shots, and that's what Steven Adams provided. I think, you know, Zach Edie could potentially do that for you as well, but I'm not super high on Edie. I think there's other guys I would rather have connect. Let's put it that way, at 9, than a player like Edie.
Drew, I'm going to throw this at you. Shoot it down if you have to. Is there a possibility that Woj, the Lakers, and Dan Hurley were all part of a plan to discredit Shams and make it look like the Lakers had a plan other than hiring LeBron James's podcast buddy? And the evidence, or some of it, would be that silly contract offer, that it wasn't $100 million, that it was 70, which we all, you know, which seemed weird, right? It wasn't even an over the top offer. Any part of you, even if it's 1%, believe that that might be the case?
I don't know if they're all in on it together, and that the goal is to embarrass Shams as much as maybe the goal was to try to put some pressure on UConn to give Danny Hurley another.
Everybody
raise.
Gets what they want. Lakers don't look so. We're going to hire. Woj gets a shot at this guy. Hurley gets a raise. Everybody got what they wanted.
I can say a few things. As somebody that is familiar with the reporting world, maybe not the breaking news world as much as a guy like Shams or Woj, but I'm familiar with how a lot of these things work. I don't think Shams would just go with something like that off of nothing. If he's willing to go with something like that, it's coming from someone very closely in the know. And I do think that there is a bit of a rivalry between Shams and Woj, and so
you're smelling me.
Do I think that Woj takes a little joy in the fact that Shams looked incorrect on this report? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know Woj like that, but it's interesting to see how all of this works as to whether or not they all colluded to try to make Shams look dumb. I don't know the answer to that, but I am certain for a fact that when coaches want something, then that's often how some big time media players get involved. Do I think Danny Hurley was involved? I mean, He's got to be. Like, I don't think Danny Hurley was just sitting back, like, you know. So I don't know if it was a ploy to get Shams, but I do think it was definitely a maneuver, has to be to some degree, a maneuver either by the Lakers or by Danny Hurley to try to put some pressure on UConn. One of those things was in play.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just that they were talking to Danny Hurley, because the offer, as you mentioned, was not what it was initially reported to be. And so, you know, if the offer is supposedly going to be more than $100 million, then, and it's actually only 70, that does put more pressure on UConn, right, to try to retain him, to try to, to boost the salary a little bit. So I don't know. I don't know how all of it played out. I'm not in that world with those guys, but I do find it to be interesting because, let's say, I'm not full conspiracy theorist here, but I'm half conspiracy theorist. I think there's something going on behind the scenes. I'm just not I can't nail down exactly what it was. I would suspect that Danny Hurley wanted to put some pressure on UConn, and Woj probably
everybody benefited.
No doubt.
Lakers don't just look like they got no plan other than hiring LeBron's buddy.